Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today is 12/2/19. That means that the month of November is over, and it's time for Mickey Fulp's monthly major market review, covering everything that happened in the major markets for November of 2019. We've definitely had some action. Stock markets are king, Mick, again, once again, Mickey. And we got some impressive numbers that came in, don't we?
Well, we certainly do, Carrie. We had all-time highs again and again and yet again. Every major U.S. market backed off a bit on Friday, but we're still looking at some really nice gains. Dow closed at 28,051 for a 3.7% gain. S&P 500, 31.41 for a 3.5% gain. NASDAQ, big winner, 86.65, 4.5% gain. The Russell 2000 did quite well, too. It went to 16.25 for a 4% gain, but it's still well off its all-time high set back in August of 2018 of 17.41. The small caps are still lagging the big boys, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So then we go to our Canadian markets.
The Toronto Stock Exchange, I've looked at its performance this year and actually compared it with the Dow and the S&P 500. And it's really tracked the U.S. mid to large cap markets, which it did not do last year very well. Right. Closed the month at 17.40 for a 3.5% gain. Meanwhile, the venture capital market, the Toronto Venture Exchange, is not doing well at all. It's just really mucking about. It hit a 52-week low of 5.31 during the month, closed at 5.32 for a percent loss. And now as we hit the next 2 weeks of really heavy tax loss selling, it could even test its all-time low of 476. Meanwhile, emerging market index did not do well either. Well, let's say it was flat. Basically, yeah. It was off 4 points. And that really has to do with China and the lack of real progress on a trade deal. Meanwhile, the VIX volatility was very low. Certainly in the low teens all month, closed at 12.6. And once again, quite low. It looks like we have to go back till September of 2018 since we've seen a VIX in this range.
Yeah, complacency is starting to rule once again. And we know when we see that VIX start slouching like that and just getting really dull, that something's probably on the way. Or so it has.
Well, we could have said that last year, too, and it didn't happen, Carrie. So.
Well, we had some volatility last year.
Well, we had a bad 2 months at the end of the year. October and November last year were not good, but we were well on the recovery by the end of the year. And then we had a rate decrease, just interest rate decline. Decrease right at the beginning of the year. So,
We had some pops though, and it did hit 51 on an intraday high last year. And, you know, it'll stay complacent for so long, and then who knows?
And that was end of the year, because I'm looking at it was 25.4 on the last day of the year last year. So,
all right. So, looking at our currencies now.
Well, there's not much to say about the currencies. A bit stronger for the dollar, closed at 98.3 for a 1.1% gain. Euro a bit weaker, lost 1.3% to close at 110. We don't really cover it, but I wanted to mention the loonie has had a horrible record since the election, where they elected the liberal ski bum again, with a coalition government being formed between the Liberal Party, the National Democratic Party, which is a socialist party, and the Green Party. So money changers all over the world were not very happy with that. I'm not sure what the Canadians think about it, but anyway, we continue to go on. 10-year Treasury actually gained despite the rate decreased over the month, closed at 1.78 for 5% gain. The yield is no longer inverted, so really it was longer-term bonds, the 10 and 30-year bonds, which really rallied. And finally, Bitcoin went quite negative toward the end of the month as the Chinese indicated they're going to float their own cryptocurrency of some sort, and they're really going to clamp down on Bitcoin. It lost almost 16% to close at 77.05.
Hey, Will, not surprising. If you look at the chart of Bitcoin, and it's still in a bear market. It's still in a declining market, and I don't think we've seen the lowest yet. I'm sure the people of Hong Kong are happy that it's around if they can use it, because they are getting their money out of China. I think we can look at lower yuan prices in the future, because I think there's, depending on what they do there, I mean, look, U.S. Trump supported the Hong Kong protesters. They passed a couple of resolutions that don't mean a heck of a lot other than a loss of face for China. And then the trade deal is out the window. So we're in for a period of really interesting volatility on the currency front and on the cryptocurrency front.
Well, what you said is exactly true. I've witnessed this in my home away from home in downtown Vancouver for the last 10 years. Lots of Chinese money, and in particular, a lot of Chinese money that people that don't speak Mandarin, i.e. Hong Kong, has moved in into the real estate market in Vancouver. And that's a bubble waiting to burst, but we can delve into that at some other juncture.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens if there's another wave of flight capital out of China, but that'll be reflected in these markets, no doubt. So now we go off to our metals. Not a pretty sight there at all.
Well, gold got knocked back to resistance. It blew right through 1480, and it held at about 1450, 1455 during early November, basically the first week of November. It's been flat ever since. And really what happened was the markets went risk on again. So the safe haven movements into gold were lessened, and some of the banks turned negative and shorted gold. So added all up, gold held in fairly well, closed at 1464 for a 3% loss. Silver was the big loser, closed at $17 even for a 6% loss. Platinum lost 36 points, $36, I should say, to close at 894 for a 4% gain. And palladium actually lost during the first week of November, but while all the other ones flatlined over the rest of the month, it went on the uptick again, closed an all-time high on Friday of 1822 for a 2.4% gain. And as I look at the platinum price this morning on December 2nd, we're looking at 1835. So it's well on its way to another all-time record today. Finally, copper was range-bound, and it has been since mid-October, somewhere between 262 and 269. It's totally dependent on trade war rumors, and until that's settled, I don't expect the base metal complex to perform very well.
Yeah, no doubt you're correct. Palladium is going to hit 2,000 before gold, so it would appear. If it keeps going.
Well, it certainly could. And you know how many times I've said that gold will hit 2000 when pigs fly. I especially started saying that in about 2010 and 2011. Never made it there, but you could be right.
Yeah. Well, look, this is a multi-year bull market that's been taking place in palladium.
We'll discuss that a bit more when we get to our ratios, Kerry.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. So now let's take a look at our energy prices and Well, if you're a nat gas trader, then there's a reason why they call that the widowmaker.
That's certainly true, but let's look at the oils first. They were range bound all month. WTI traded somewhere between about 55.20 and 58.50. It's at finished the month at the low end at 55.42, 2.3% gain. Not a lot going on in the oil market right now. Risk on, risk off. Certainly with the risk on markets and the short week last week, we saw oil get knocked down about 2-3% over the week, and that also had to do with not much holiday trading in the futures and options market. You know, we had a 3.5-day week last week in the U.S. Meanwhile, Brent closed at 62.43, a bit better. It was up 3.7% compared to WTI's 2.3%. And finally, you alluded to the widowmaker. Henry Hub gas is being affected by high inventories. Despite all the Thanksgiving Turkey Day storms that are going around and certainly disrupting air traffic in the United States, it closed at 228 for a 13% loss on the month. Gave back everything it gained last month with a 12.9% gain. We're in the seasonality of natural gas right now, and it all has to do with the weather forecast.
Yeah, well, usually the price of nat gas predicts the weather better than the meteorologists do.
than your local weatherman.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's priceless, Gary.
Yeah, well, it's so true. If you watch the price, but what's interesting here is the price crashed last month. I mean, that almost qualifies as a crash, not so much in terms of magnitude, but because the price is so low already. When you get to the low twos, it's really hard for any of those dry producers to make any money on this.
Well, yeah, and so it's all about wet gas, right?
Yeah. So it's just interesting that right before this Thanksgiving freeze, it crashed. And, you know, now we're stuck with it. Maybe it'll go down below $2. So that's going to tell us a lot.
Well, we know what's going to happen. If it gets cold in Boston, Mass, it'll go to the double-digit dollar range briefly there. So,
and it'll serve them right.
And upstate New York, too, you know, where they've got all those no to fracking signs in their front yards in Woodstock.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, there's a
reason. Anywhere in the Catskills.
Yeah. It's so ridiculous, but we've been through that before. Hey, you know, like it's just, you know, maybe it causes earthquakes and maybe they need an earthquake in upstate New York, in New York State, but it certainly doesn't contaminate groundwater or, you know, you don't turn on your faucet and light a match and have flames coming out. It's absurd.
Well, maybe you do, but you've been doing that a long time before fracking became the end thing to do.
Ignorance is such a commodity in oversupply, for sure. So uranium it got a little bump last month.
It did. It's been up over the last 3 weeks, pending anticipation of the Section 232 actions by the Trump administration. And we got guidance from the new Department of Energy secretary or the nominee that was imminent, but that was 3 weeks ago and still hadn't happened. So it closed at 25.93, up 8% on the month. And you know, I got a little tidbit for you. We talked a bit about fracking. And last week, Vladimir Putin, the energy czar that he is, called U.S. shale oil barbaric and flatly stated that Russia would never drill for shale oil.
But he was
whatever
also
that means, Gary.
He was also
it's barbaric.
Yeah, he was also caught off mic.
U.S. oil men are barbaric, according to Vladimir.
Right. Well, he was also caught off mic, bemoaning the rise of fracked oil and gas and how injurious it had been to Russia. And really, you trace back, you know, Mickey, we forgot to mention one major event that happened 2 days ago or 3 days ago. And that was for the first time ever, since they've been keeping records, since 1949, the U.S. exported more petroleum than it imported.
Well, I did not know that, Kerry. Thanks for that tidbit. But we knew it was coming. And please send me a link. Maybe we could put that link up on the intro to our show, because I'm very interested in learning more about that. That's amazing.
So they've been keeping records since 1949. And the U.S. has always been a net importer of petroleum, which I didn't really realize. And for the first time ever, it exported more, about 500,000 barrels, I think it was, per day. And, you know, it's been exporting millions of barrels. It's a very complicated thing because we import a lot of petroleum just to refine it.
So it's, right? Well, I think probably it's petroleum products. So you've got crude, you've got condensate, you've got petroleum products.
Jet fuel.
Well, you've got natural gas, so you've got a lot of things in there. But anyway, we'll have that link up on your website here.
Right. I'm shooting it out to you right now. It's from Forbes, and it documents the entire thing. EIA, Energy Administration, started in 1949. So it's fascinating to see that these numbers really do make a difference. But what's also interesting is exporting of LNG really has not had any impact upon the price of nat gas. Well, you know, this is a long-term trend that I think is going to be moving in the right direction. So let's take a look at our ratios here. And what do we see?
Well, I've got several highlighted here. The gold-silver ratio closed at 86.1, and that's of interest because it's been flat for the last 5 weeks. It's been somewhere between 86.1 and 86.7, so that ratio has really stabilized after quite a lot of volatility in the early parts of this year. The platinum-to-gold ratio is stuck. It's stuck at 0.61. It's come off its all-time low of 0.59 in June, but for the last 5 months, we've been at 0.61 or 0.60. And finally, the platinum-palladium ratio, which we've alluded to already, hit an all-time low on Friday of 0.49. That means that it takes 2 ounces of more than 2 ounces of platinum to buy an ounce of palladium. And if we look down our chart, it was in 5 years ago in October of 2013, it was just the opposite. It took 2 ounces of palladium to buy an ounce of platinum. The world is topsy-turvy.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to have to go study that platinum market a little closer to get a better insight, but it appeared that platinum was starting to be in a bull market. It was heading towards 1,000, you know, got close and then was shot down. I still think we could be at the beginning of one, but man, palladium is just no stop for it.
Well, I've got a single answer for you on this, and it's South Africa and the demand for palladium being in deficit is basically ixnayed or vetoed, however you want to say it, by the price of platinum, which is in surplus. These are platinum mines with palladium byproducts. And if you can't make it on platinum, you don't produce the palladium. And that's really what's going on in the world with the price of palladium, which is still going exponential. And mark my words, it will go parabolic at some point.
Oh, it virtually has to. It virtually has to because we're in deficit. but it's ironic that decreased platinum production is affecting palladium production, and thereby
basically they go together.
Yeah,
there really isn't a primary palladium mine in the world. The one that would probably come closest would be the Stillwater up in southeast Montana, but it's a relatively small mine. It does produce quite a bit more palladium than it does platinum, but that's not the rule generally in these deposits worldwide.
Yeah, fascinating. And we'll look forward to see next month, Mickey, if palladium is going to break that 2000 mark then, because it's just gone up consistently without a stop. Hey, anyway, check out Mickey's site, mercenarygeologist.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Twitter feed is at mercenarygeo. Check us out, financialsurvivalnetwork.com, and subscribe to our newsletter. The Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Mickey, we will pick up at the same place that we've left off today, next month, same time.
I look forward to it, Kerry. Happy holiday season to you and yours. And I will catch you again right around the end of the year. And let's hope these markets keep on percolating.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. And happy and healthy to you and yours as well. And yep, we'll talk to you right before the new year, and we'll get the last one out. I mean, we've been doing this now, I think we're at 8 years now, Mickey. I think our first one was 12/30/11. That's a pretty good record. We missed one show because I was traveling. That's a pretty consistent record there. And I hope you're all listening to this regularly, because it's the only show of its kind that really looks back month to month to see where we've been and where we're perhaps heading.
And we've been doing it. Our show will be 9 years old on our next show at the end of this year.
Yep.
Amazing.
All right, Mickey, we'll talk to you again. You be well.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kerry.